It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 600. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's all one word, Mike Tech Show on Skype. We're going to kick off the content with a voicemail from a listener. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show, Facebook, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show, and also Mike Nation Net. I want to thank everybody for all of the tremendous years of support and following me, joining me tonight in the chat. It happens to be my 56th birthday, and it is show 600. 4 weeks ago, I realized that when I was doing the math, and I was like, wow, this is going to work out pretty good for falling on Thursday night. I'm here by myself. Everybody's working or doing something. We have so many birthdays in November and early December that we consolidate, and this Saturday, November 19th, we celebrate four birthdays at the same time, and it makes it so much easier. So, a couple administrative notes. Next week, no show. It's Thanksgiving. The next show will be Thursday, December 1st. Mark that down. And in case I forget, and I always forget at the end, especially everybody in the States who's celebrating Thanksgiving, have a happy and safe Thanksgiving. Have a wonderful time with your family, friends, significant others. Have a safe and happy holiday. I have some tech stories that I absolutely have to share of some frustrations on working on some systems and some things that I found that I just absolutely have to share with you. Then I have some follow-up questions after the voicemail, some legitimate tech questions that I want to get to, and then a nice stack of email where you have responded with asking me anything, sort of, that I'll respond to. Lots of great tech. I am closing with a very humbling story that you will understand sort of how I was built in the IT world based on this story, and you understand my passion for backups. It's a very humbling learning experience, and it's based on, I was going to share this story, but it just lines up very nicely with a great email from Kate asking me for this. Before we get started, over the last few years, just a huge thank you for the continued support of Instant House Call. I would not have Instant House Call as a sponsor if I didn't personally use it and have it on over 100 workstations that I support. Unattended access. The software just flat out works. I can connect and take care of anything, reboot it and reconnect. I can diagnose problems using AutoD7. It has been a lifesaver for my business. And if you need that remote control experience to help you, then try a 15-day trial by going to instanthousecall.com, download the trial, use the promo code Mike Tech Show, and you'll be back to sign up because it makes a big difference for your consulting or IT business. This week, the challenges. You would think buying two brand new Dell Optiplexes with Windows 7 Pro, I can't roll out Windows 10. There's a couple clients. I mean, I have a lot of clients with Windows 10. This client has software that cannot go to Windows 10. That's it. If we're getting new workstations, we still have to get Windows 7 Pro. And luckily for Dell, on the Prime site where I access it through my Dell distributor, I can order Dell OptiPlexes. Two Dell OptiPlex 7040s. They come, and I can't stop it, with Office 365 trial. Now, the one person who's getting this system for my client has a subscription for Office 365. But you want to know something? You can't use the trial version if someone already has Office 365. You can try to sign in with their credentials. No. It will not let you. You have to uninstall Office 365 trial and then re-download it from their account, from accounts.microsoft.com. And they're allowed 5 systems. And if you still have some room, you can download it and install it. It would not uninstall. Everything I tried. I tried Revo uninstaller, and it would not uninstall the Office 365 trial. Now, the other system, I have to put Office 2010, and I have the company's media. The owner is the one who has Office 2016 from his Office 365 subscription. And this one system is a replacement for the owner's system. Everybody else has Office 2010. No problem. They have the license. We can't uninstall it. So the first link for tonight, guess what Dell has? Dell has a knowledge base article. How to uninstall Microsoft Office 365 from your Dell PC. And there is a fix, a Microsoft Fix-It utility to remove it. And it does work. I can vouch for that. I got it to work with no problem. But it was driving us crazy, and I had to search this, and it's amazing. I don't know if it's just Dell systems or just Dell happens to, you know, they have the solution there, but clearly Microsoft knows this is a problem because they have an automatic fix it. The manual process for uninstalling it looks just too long and cumbersome. You could do it manually, but this fix it does work. I was able to move on. So what's the next problem? How about just trying to do Windows 7 updates? Now, this has been a struggle for a long time, and I have talked about this over and over of the failures and problems with Windows 7 updates, and we have all kinds of procedures. Well, guess what? All the procedures, they don't work anymore. Some of them just flat out don't work. So the link for tonight, and this was from a listener, Kevin. I think it was Kevin. I'll get to it. This is the article that saved me. And what I was able to do, there are 8 downloads. And if you take a look for Windows 7 64-bit, there's 8 links. Download all of those hotfixes. Sort them in the order of the knowledge base number and run them in that order. When you're done running them, then, and by the way, run them with the network cable pulled. So copy them over, and I strongly recommend WSUS offline. Have it updated. Copy that over to the system. Run them with no network cable. Reboot when it tells you to. And eventually, the WSUS offline will tell you you're done. There's no more to do. Then you can kick off the regular Windows update, and it works. And I did this last night. I absolutely know it works. Because also last night, and this is a story for another, the December 1st, worked on a server that was getting an error every time you tried to log in, and it would just endlessly reboot. And this is Small Business Server 2008. Ken, my tech and I fixed this, and I was able to email the client at about 1 a.m., and this is a radio station in Philadelphia that, of course, they didn't have backups. We hadn't been there in years. They're not a retainer client. I'm not monitoring their backups, and they are so lucky that I was able to get in. And the minute we were able to get in one time before I even rebooted again, I got an external drive, and I got all the data off. Then reboot it, and it worked. And then did the Windows updates and made sure it was all up to date and everything. And I've rebooted it a couple times since then. Tomorrow, I'm going to be hooking it back up for the client. Lots and lots of stories. And we're going to save a lot of those stories for another time. Let's get to a voicemail first by Nancy with a follow-up to a previous show.
Hey, Mike, this is Nancy down in Alabama. I was listening to show 598 with the user calling in about questions regarding a shared mailbox. We use a lot of shared mailboxes, and a lot of times we'll see something that looks like a rule misbehaving, and it's really just something strange misbehaving with a particular user. And what I end up having to do is remove the user's permissions and add them back. And when they add them back, they don't miss anything. They pick up, they still get to see full access to the mailbox. So any emails that were there are still there. But we've had to go through and just kind of do that with everybody that was having the issue, and that often resolves it.
Nancy, thank you very much. I have not run into that issue. I do not have a lot of, quote, true Microsoft Office 365 email users. As a matter of fact, clients, I only have one that's actually using that email system. Most of my clients are on ShareWeb, or the other small portion are still using Pop from whatever hosted service they have. Nancy, thank you very, very much for that. Email from Nick. And this is the Microsoft UK adult confirmation for a Microsoft account. I am having difficulty with my son's Microsoft account. I've spent 4.5 hours with them trying to sort it out to no avail. They have said he needs to register a new account. The problem is when he tries to log in, it asks for an adult to log in to confirm he is permitted to use the account. It is fine so long as I have to confirm I am an adult, and it asks me to pay 50 cents to charity from my US-based credit card. And we live in the UK, so don't have a US-based credit card. Microsoft seems to think when he sets up his account, he chose the USA instead of UK. They also say that it is not possible for them to go in and change it. He has had the account for a while and used it okay until recently. I don't want to lose this account because he has it used to register with online accounts. Is this something you can help me with? I can't. And I'm the last person when it comes to the Microsoft online accounts, especially for this, for the gaming. He continues, listen to the show every week, not in a computer support role. I am a gardener, but like being kept relevant in the tech industry. Nick, that's awesome. Thank you. I don't have any help. So I'm asking, does anybody have help with this? I remember when my youngest son was underage, he's now 22. I remember years ago him having an Xbox 360 or the original Xbox, excuse me, and he had a Microsoft account that I had to supervise. That was a problem when I went to extend his online subscription, and I did have to call Microsoft, and they were very helpful, but it was all US-based. You being the UK, and if he accidentally registered being in the USA, that could be a problem. So here's the question. Can he get over whatever settings or anything he had registered? Just start over in the UK. I think you tried that. Maybe you got to reconnect and talk to a different engineer on tech support and see what you can get. Anybody, especially if you're UK-based listening, you can share some info here. I know Nick would appreciate it. Thank you. This is from Scott, and it's about Web of Trust, where I pronounce that woot, and that's wrong. Thanks for the info about Web of Trust. I will be informing my newsletter readers and podcast listeners about this as well. One thing, every time I hear you say woot, I think of the popular bargain website, www.woot.com, which is actually pronounced woot. They are definitely a completely legitimate service. Absolutely. I buy from Woot. I like that. With some great bargains on a variety of products. A new one is featured each day. Wouldn't want people to confuse the two. Scott, and he's host of the Computer Tutor podcast. Wait to hear his website, because we were just talking about all the Florida listeners and people in the chat from Florida. It's computertutorflorida.com. Scott, thank you for the email, and he's right. When I say woot, I don't know, what should it be? Well, what? Or it shouldn't be a long O. Anyway, it's Web of Trust, which is mywoot.com, but the bargain website, Woot, is perfect to buy from. They stand behind their orders, and I only have positive stories personally from purchasing from Woot. Make a clarification there. This is from Eddie. Love your show, and I've been listening to your podcast for the past 9 months, still catching up on the past episodes, and Tech Vets as well. I am preparing to start my computer repair business and have learned a lot from your shows. Just want to find out about the unconvention videos you spoke of coming out in the future. Have I missed it, or is it still in the pipeline? Well, before we get to the next question, unfortunately, we used my little Kodak camera and we just turned it on, set it, forget it, and let it record everything and occasionally turned it off and turned it back on for the next presentation. The video quality is not worthy of reselling and charging anybody for it. So as a group, we decided not to release the videos of the sessions at the Toronto Unconvention 2016. I apologize. If there's anything going forward on any unconventions, that will change. There will definitely be better recording of the video and audio so it can be packaged possibly and resold. But no guarantee. It all depends on budget. It all depends on what's happening. Don't know. We'll keep you posted. But there's not going to be any for the 2016. Secondly, what kind of backup solution will you recommend to your home clients, if any? I know you do mention Synology NAS, but not sure if it's mainly for business clients or home. Any recommendations? I absolutely recommend Synology NASs for home and businesses, but it's the version that I'm going to recommend. I'll only recommend a 2-drive version for a home, which is a smaller, slower processor, less memory. But then I will go to a more business class Synology, and you can get some pretty high-end Synologies for the NASs. But for a work group or a small business, I will, you can have, more than 4 drives. I usually recommend 4 drives with lots of RAM, 2 NICs that can be bonded together. So you can literally have 2 gig duplexed on any switch. You can really scale. When you go to Synology.com and look at all of the different models, you will see where, based on whether you're home or whether you're in an office environment, and they can recommend the right model just by what you're trying to do, you can pick. And then search Amazon or Newegg or online and look for a good price that matches the model that you'll use. For backups at home, if your data is really important, it's Shadow Protect, whether you're home or office. If you can't afford the $99, then you at least have to use something like SyncBack and be syncing your files to an offline drive, an external drive. Here's what I recommend. At the very least, use the Windows backup in Windows 7 and Windows 10 or Windows 8. Have an external drive, use that. That should be the bare minimum that you should be doing. Then, if you want something more robust, you use Shadow Protect Desktop. This is from Darren, and he snuck this in right before I was ready to close my email for starting the show tonight. Hey, Mike, happy birthday. Quick question. I have a company that is using a workstation as a server. I have a lot of companies that are doing that. Its main purpose is for shared doc files and QuickBooks. I only need about 2 to 4 terabytes of storage. Question, what NAS would you buy? Is it hard to have one NAS replicate to a second NAS for backup? No, it's not. Actually, with Synology, it's built in. You can actually synchronize. So what you would do first is put the two NASs together, do a quick sync. Then you can take the other one off site and continue the sync by setting up the passwords and the procedure Synology has tremendous online documentation for you to be able to figure that out. And the synchronization, it's tremendous. And I'm going to be doing this for a business that has one NAS. They're moving to another location. And we said, he said, you know what? I want to get a bigger Synology. And I said, you know what? Let's use this older one as a backup that we replicate to. The owner has Fios at home, so he has a great connection. He can keep that at home and we can sync to it. It's perfect. Now, which model? It depends on your budget. It depends on how much size. You don't need a lot. If you need 4 terabytes and it's a business, I would get a 4-bay Synology NAS that fits your budget, and I would get 4 3-terabyte drives or 4 2-terabyte drives and get the Western Digital Red NAS Pro drives. Maybe 4 2-terabytes. That'll leave you 6 terabytes. You're good to go. Don't forget, you have to back up your NAS, even though you have a RAID environment. You must back up your NAS. Get a very large Western Digital Red NAS, put it in an enclosure, hang it off the USB 3 connection, and then use the installed backup of the Synology to back that up to an external drive. Questions specifically for tonight's show. The last few weeks I've asked for Ask Me Anything, and within reason, I will answer the question. We shall begin. This is from Alberto. Could you briefly describe how you started your business? What technologies have you saw growing and changing? When you begun, which software tools did you have? Laptops better? Or what do you do in general? Better laptops, desktops? In the past, American cars were built to last. How is that in today's time period? He's comparing. A personal opinion, just to hear from a professional and a Mac user, your opinion about Linux and 2016 Apple products, MacBook Pro, as I understand it, has low specs. Since I don't have Apple and you have a little experience, I'd like to hear your opinion. There's lots of questions here. How did I start my business? In 2008, I was laid off from my corporate job where I was the network manager of a large company for 12 years. And I had spent over 20 years in the corporate world. I started my full-time consulting back at the end of 2008. Prior to that, I was consulting part-time on the side, nights and weekends. So I had already had the taste for consulting, dealing with clients, invoicing them. I had already set up my own business bank account. So as you can see, I already started things on a part-time basis. And that money was used, I used that money as disposable income, sort of my hardware slush fund. I could then buy whatever I wanted and do whatever I wanted. I worked when I wanted. So it was just extra income and I didn't overdo it. Well, at the end of 2008, could I make a living at this full time? I learned very quickly that if I didn't come up with a business model for regular income, I would not be on my own very long. I cannot live by break fix alone. And I learned that early that I could not just wait for business to come from current clients when they have a problem and then bill them. I needed regular sustainable income to pay the bills and grow the business. The only way to do that was to sign up clients on contracts for regular ongoing support. Once I did that, I use that as the foundation to build my business. I now have 2 techs working for me. It's phenomenal. I can't ask for any more. My business has been growing slow and steady organically as I've been taking on more business, and I am very thankful. That's just one question. The technology growing. Here, I'm going to give you a better answer. I try to stay on top of it, but I can't stay on top of everything. I stay on top of the technology that's significant for me to market my skill set for consulting. An example, my clients don't have nor embrace Linux or virtualization. So I'm very weak on virtualization now, where when I was in the corporate world, oh my gosh, we consolidate it 200 servers down to 8 using virtualization and using blade server technology, huge SAN environment. I haven't touched that in years and years now. My business model is being the tech support for small businesses. So I stay up on top of like the Synology NASs, stay on top of the operating system, stay on top of desktop, business desktop technology, laptops. I am an Apple guy. I'm not going to spend a lot of time, but I am very disappointed at Apple's MacBook Pros. I have no interest in the new MacBook Pros. When it comes to the iPhone, I hate my iPhone 7, but I don't hate it just because it doesn't have an audio jack. I hate it because I have trouble receiving phone calls. First and foremost, it's a lousy cell phone. iOS 10 coupled with the iPhone 7 is a horrible combination for cell phones, and I want it for my business. I'm this close to becoming an Android user just to be able to receive phone calls. So, I'll get off my box there. First and foremost, you have to be able to answer the phone to be able to talk to someone. And I have a fundamental problem with that with my phone. And this is a common problem I've been reading. Now, it got a little better with iOS 10 1.1. But let me tell you before that, it's all been just pain and suffering on my part. He wants to hear from a professional Mac user. Now, I love my 27-inch iMac, which is a couple years old, and I just love it. They haven't done much with the iMac since I've had this for a couple years. They keep changing and trying to evolve and messing things up with the MacBook. My MacBook Pro of a vintage 2010 is phenomenal. I have 8 gigs of RAM. I tricked it up. I put in an SSD. I love it. I love my USB ports. I love my optical drive with it. It's great. And it's running fantastic, and I wouldn't trade it. And it's a 13-inch MacBook Pro 2010. You have to decide when you're doing this for a business. If you don't have any Apple experience, I don't know if that's going to gain you any more business. I personally had Apples, and so I have clients that are all Mac because they needed someone who understood networking. And I am a rare person where I live in the Windows world predominantly, but I have Mac background and experience. Am I an expert on the Mac? No. But I know enough to connect up, to have Macs talk to anything that I want from a storage, have Windows talk to Mac, vice versa, sharing printers, everything. You know, I can do it all from a networking perspective. And that's enabled me to gain more clients. Alberto, I hope I answered all your questions. Linux, I just don't have the time to play with it. I wish I did. I have zero clients using or even thinking of going to Linux. So because of that, I am going where the money is locally. And the money is not there for Linux. Oh, no. Thank you for the brilliant podcast and stories from the trenches you discuss each week. As I have been listening for over 5 years, please get an Amazon affiliate that works in the UK. Oh, I wish I could. UK and Canada. As it looks like the link only works for the US customers. It is, and it is in the agreement that because I sit in the US, I can only be an affiliate and receive affiliate funds from the US. Maybe I need a UK presence for MHS Consulting and then set up an affiliate, a separate affiliation there. Anyway, seeing as you've asked for questions on anything to discuss for show 600, I'd like to ask the following. I remember in a previous show, you stated you purchased a PS4 console. That was a long time ago. Which games do you go for a quick session? Are you ready? I've bought games more for my grandchildren who come over and play. So there's lots of, you know, Star Wars, Angry Birds, or whatever, there's games. But I'm going to give you my guilty pleasure game that when I need a break, what I go to, and it's Pinball Arcade. That's the CD that constantly remains in my PS4. I predominantly use my PS4 to play any Blu-ray or DVDs, and I use it for Netflix and Amazon Prime. And then during the baseball season, my MLB premium package. That's it. That's what the PlayStation's for there. And then in between, when I need a break, it's Pinball Arcade. I just love that game. Second question. Watch TV shows or movies that you go to? Other than Mr. Robot, which is a brilliant series, by the way. Thanks for all you do for the community and paying it back. And happy birthday. Well belated, as by the time you get to this email, your birthday would have passed. No, I'm reading it on my birthday, so thank you very much. Okay, I've put a list. I looked at my DVR. What are the series that I am recording? This is what I have to watch. Designated Survivor. It's a must for me. Big Bang Theory. Walking Dead. That is absolutely required. Walking Dead, love the series. Guilty pleasure, Madam Secretary. Westworld. If you have HBO, you got to embrace Westworld. Shameless. Blacklist. I'm going to give you another one that I've just started, Black Mirror on Netflix. I'm going to say one thing about Black Mirror. Think of the Twilight Zone for tech. And I think that would sum up Black Mirror. Thanks for the questions. This is Jeremy. I hope you are feeling better. You didn't sound too good on the last show. This is a few shows ago. Yeah, I was pretty sick that Saturday when I was recording. You said you wanted questions for show 600. I have a couple of them for you. I have been a loyal listener since the 500th episode. What kind of podcast microphone do you use? It's very easy, and it's actually compliments of Mr. Winston Wolf in the chat. I used to have the Shure SM58, but I have upgraded to the Shure Beta 58A, and I love, love, love it. I am very interested in getting into podcasting. What advice would you have for me? Also, are you going to be doing more Tech Vets episodes? Now, he wrote this before we did Tech Vets last week, so had a great time last Thursday recording Tech Vets. Uncle Al mentioned Silicon Valley. I do watch Silicon Valley when that was on. Tips for getting started in the podcasting. I'm going to give you the most important tip. Have the passion for your topic. Whatever you're going to be talking about, you got to have passion. It's got to come through. And everybody that listens knows it. Everybody that listens to the Mike Tech Show or Tech Vets, you hear Tech Vets. You hear Carrie Holzman and I, our passion. When you listen to this show, you know my passion. My passion for when things are wrong, whether it be Microsoft or Apple or anybody beating up Woot because of what they did, WOT, my Woot, other vendors, products, and share the good stories, the bad stories, the good, the bad, the ugly, trying to help you become a better tech, position yourself better in technology, whether you're in the business or not. Tips and tricks that make you more productive. That's my theme. Have a theme. Passion, and do it on a regular basis. This is show 600. I've been doing this forever. I listened to two tech podcasts years ago. One has pod faded and they stopped doing it. It was Kevin Devin in the Trenches. I love that show because I felt like he was speaking to me where I was a system administrator, a network engineer, and he shared the same problems that I was facing in the corporate world. And I could relate to that podcast. I hung on every word on every episode. The next one, and he is still podcasting and is the tech podcast godfather. And that's Todd Cochran of Geek News Central. I don't listen as much. I do listen. I try to tune in. Todd's been doing this for a long time. And it was those two individuals that basically I wanted to do something that I thought was missing, which was not either of them, but a combination. Some stories, but not news. Not really. You don't get your news here unless it's so in your face, it's so big we can't avoid it. Like the Yahoo problem with their security breach. You know, we got to talk about these big stories, but it's really solving problems, those tips and tricks, things that's going to help your business, things that's going to help you, whatever you're doing relating to tech. And I felt that that was missing, something else. And Todd still does the show by himself. I want to do the podcast by myself because I can only blame one person, me. I don't have to wait for someone else. I don't have to rely on someone else. I don't have to try to match times or anything. You hear me. I don't have guests. I'll do special shows. I'll have guests one night, like when Winston and I debated the audio jack on the iPhone 7. We're going to have a server show coming up. Those things, that's different. That's some specialty things where I'll bring the expert to task, you know, with me as needed and bring them on board. But I don't have a regular show any kind of co-host or anything. But that's why I love Tech Vets and doing that, because I feed that need for a co-host on that podcast. We just can't do it enough because we're so busy. And I got to admit, this past year, the reason why there's been less Tech Vets, it's not because of Carrie. It's because of me. I've been too busy. And you can see that. I barely have time to do this every single week. So in answer, the long way to get to your question, Jeremy, you got to have the bandwidth to be able to do this on a regular basis. If you just do it a little bit now and then, you're not going to develop the following and the listeners. Have a passion for your topic. You got to love doing it. The listeners will come if you do that and do that on a regular basis. That's the best advice that I can give. And anybody who's tried podcasting knows this, and anybody that's doing it. I am a podcast listener for the last 2 to 3 years. Thank you for your podcast. You are providing an excellent service for us. Here's my question. I'm in the middle of a career change and contemplating what I want to do next. I am considering attending Prime Academy for software developing, programming, and coding. I have been a Marine Chief Engineer for 20 years, where hardware, software, and networks have been only a part of my life. Now that I am land-based and starting a family, I want to get into what I love and have a passion for, and it's technology. Do you see software as growth potential, and or where do you see opportunities over the next 10 years? You know, it's very interesting. This is Philip. Philip, you mentioned that you have been dealing with hardware, software, and networks. That's very different than programming, developing, and coding. Do you enjoy sitting there coding where you lose track of time and maybe you've lost a day where you didn't eat or sleep or and you're coding? Then you should hone those skills and develop it. But the hardware and technology and networking piece is very different than being a software coder. And I believe there's a future in both. There's a need for networking, and there always will be. Whatever the technology is, I could care less what the software and hardware is. Whatever is popular, I will learn it, and I'll be able to connect it, troubleshoot it, roll it out, fix it, and make it work with anything. I truly believe that. Put anything in front of me, I will learn it, I will get it connected, and talking to whatever it has to talk to. That's what I love, and that's my passion, and how I've built my consulting business. I don't like coding. I'm not a programmer. It's just not my thing. I believe there's a huge future for that. I believe there's still, even though there's a lot of people out there doing it, there's still a need for good programmers. And I think if you're a good coder, you're going to be employed for a long, long time. That won't go away. And you adapt to the language of the time that's current. And if you are at your core, have the skill set of programming. It doesn't matter what language it is. Excellent, excellent question. I hope I gave you a couple things to think about to decide which path you'll take. Whichever one, quick comment, my mother gave me a long time ago, and she passed away in 2001. I graduated from Drexel University in 1984. My major when I started was chemical engineering. But in the last couple years, I switched to business and all my electives were pre-law. I was going to go to law school. And I'll never forget having a conversation with my mom. And there was a ton of lawyers. Well, there's always a ton of lawyers at the time. And my mother said one thing. She said, you know, there's always room for one more good lawyer. So don't let that stop you that there's too many. If someone tells you, oh, there's a ton of programmers and there's room for one more great programmer. You're a network engineer. I don't care how many are out there. There's room for one more good one. Keep that in mind. Go with your gut for the passion for what you like and become a master of it. Be a sponge. Learn as much as you possibly can about your topic, and the money will follow. From Dante, testing your backup. Oh my, how important. Hi, Mike. I have a good question for the show. I know it's always good practice to routinely test your client's backup. What is the procedure that your company takes to routinely test the backups for clients that are on a managed services? Just looking to see how you approach this, I run Shadow Protect on many of my servers that we protect and simply restore some of the data files to make sure that they are able to be restored. I never test a full partition restore or restore to another system. How about you? What is your procedure for testing? Is your process automated or manual? It is absolutely manual. And in my calendar for my clients, every couple months, I make sure on a server, I open up and mount the backup and recover a file and just make sure, can I read a bunch of files? I copy a file over. We're going to add something there that I do for one particular client. Also, what is your favorite backup media? What type of devices do you like to back up to? External hard drive, NAS? I only back up to external hard drives. Is it the same for servers and workstations, or do you have a different solution for servers? What about offsite? There's lots of questions here. So let's start. I use Shadow Protect on all my servers. I do an occasional restore every couple months to just make sure that it's working. And of course, I get a success or failure backup warning every single night from all the servers. I do this on critical workstations where there's no server involved. I have a law firm that has four workstations, but they're so critical, they each have Shadow Protect desktop, and I occasionally will mount it and test and do a restore of a file and make sure to copy the file and that I can read it. For complete bare metal recovery, I only have one client that requires this, and I do this once a year as part of their compliance test. Their FINRA compliance requires that they have an off-site recovery of their server. So I take and recover to another server that Shadow Protect image once a year. That's the only client that I do that, and it's because of a compliance issue that they know they have to do. The amount of servers that I'm supporting is greatly being reduced because most of my clients are peer-to-peer networks or they have a Synology NAS. I have maybe only 6-7 clients with servers anymore because most of their applications and everything is moving to cloud-based, and it frees up the need for having a full-blown server. Unless they have a SQL database or something important that they can't go cloud-based. An example, I have a law firm that uses the case management software Needles. You've heard me mention that. Well, it's still server-based. I got no choice. I have a hearing aid doctor's office. Their server has the software package NOAA that's SQL-based on the server. We can't go to a NAS. We let the application guide us to the hardware that's needed. And if it needs the full server, it has it. If they don't have a software need to have a full-blown server, then they only need file storage. And in that case, it's a Synology NAS. And then I back that up. Now, cloud backup, I have several clients based on their compliance and their needs, and I will run the list for you. Vault America, Mozy Pro, Carbonite, just because I have clients that won't use anything else, regardless of what I say. Amazon Glacier, which you know is slow and difficult to restore, but very inexpensive for a grandfather backup that you're not going to touch, only break glass in case of emergency, and know that you're going to get hit with fees, and it's going to be slow to get it recovered because you have to put the request in. But I would rather have that than no online backup at all. And it's pennies per gig per month. So very worth it. That's it for my online, really, for online services that encompass all of my clients. The final question for the night, and this is where you're going to get my final story that I've never shared with anybody. This is from Kate. Happy birthday. Congratulations on show 600. Is there another tech podcast that has made it to that milestone? Actually, Geek News Central is actually longer than mine. I hope I'm not too late with your show 600 question. Have you ever encountered a troubleshooting or implementation situation that made you afraid? And I don't mean just not wanting to do it or startled. Whoa, I've never seen that error before. But generally afraid, where you actually physically experienced fear. And how did that turn out? Kate, you struck a nerve. We're going to go back. In the pre-show, I revealed what company this is. Let's say this is a very large company that has over 30,000 employees, okay? And I'm the CC mail administrator of that company a long time ago. And as a lowly network engineer, I was responsible for the mail maintenance. Now, this is at a time where most of you did not even know the word email existed. But for this company, it was the lifeblood of their organization. And I was responsible for doing the check stat reclaims. And anybody who's old enough, who's experienced maintenance on CC mail, the hair just stood up on the back of your neck on this maintenance. It's a complex, ugly little database maintenance that you had to do on a weekly basis to keep the mail post offices clean for CC mail. For the corporate headquarters located in Center City, Philadelphia, we had many of these post offices on several IBM servers using OS LAN server as the operating system. So OS 2, that was my big corporate introduction experience for change control procedures. I was set to write scripts in Rex to automate the maintenance process. The first thing you do is you must stop the mail database. So this way nobody's logged in. And you have to copy the database to another server. Then you do the maintenance on the server. Then after the server is done on that maintenance where you're actually doing the remote maintenance, you kind of do it to a remote file. You then copy the file that has the maintenance back over the production database. So you with me? So we take and we copy, we do a safety backup of the database, and then we do a maintenance on the database where it writes the corrected file to another server. And then when the result passes and it's done and the verification checks, we then copy it back over to the production database. Well, I tested my script on a test CC mail database server, and it worked perfectly. So I had a test area that I was able to copy it to. I watched my script run. I ran it again. I ran it several times. We're now ready for production. Our maintenance window was Wednesday evenings. It's now Wednesday night, and the first post office that I'm executing this actually is the post office of every senior executive in this multi-billion dollar company. My script, not only does it fail in the middle, it takes a database that is not fixed and overwrites the production database. This one post office, all the other post offices worked. There was an error here that they now lost 24 hours of email. 24 hours of email was gone forever, never to be recovered, an impossibility to recover. You want to know fear? You want to know what is this makes or breaks you? This is one of those moments where I want it to never work in computers again. This is where you look and you think of any possible job would be better than the one that I was doing at that moment. Now, I have to call my boss and tell him that every executive in this company, their email is gone for the last 24 hours. Just 24 hours, mind you. How bad can that be? So my boss wants to kill me. Okay. I don't think there's any form of death that was going to be satisfying enough for him. To make a long story short, I can talk hours about this. We're going to fast forward to the next morning where, by the way, I'm still there. I have not slept. So I'm now there 24 hours and my desk is a little bit down the hall from my boss's office. From the closed door in my boss's office, I can hear the senior vice president of this company saying, "Who the bleep is this Michael Smith and why is he still working for us?" And everybody heard that on the floor. So now we're talking a pretty embarrassing moment at the same time of making a mistake and making, but I stood up, I told the truth. I put together and wrote up what went wrong, why it went wrong, and what I was doing to make sure that it was an impossibility for that to ever happen again. And I put that all together. And by the way, when I say I was there 24 hours, add another 12. I was there for 36 hours straight with no sleep. Here's what basically happened. There was a record written on, there was a reprimand that was put together and put in my file. But everybody calmed down. They dealt with the 24-hour loss of mail for those people. Here's the lessons, not just backup and making sure you have double backup. One of the things that I learned is my boss sold me out because he was a coward. He didn't back me up in the least bit for my experience, what I've brought to the table, all the good that I've done for the company. I had to fight for that for myself. No one helped me during this process. And I looked at that manager back then and said, if I'm ever in that position, if I'm ever a manager where I'm managing a group of network people and something happens like that to me, I will never sell him out. I will stand up for my employees, the people that work for me. I will defend them and I will work with them with whatever it takes. And it's why anybody that's worked for me in the corporate world, and my wife always jokes, I don't understand. Why do you continually want to work for Mike? Because they know I will take a bullet for them. So let's fast forward to April 28th, 2003. Huh? How can you remember that date? You know why I remember that date? Because I was at a Pearl Jam concert. It's April 28th, 2003 at the Spectrum. I get a call from one of my junior engineers, and we have these procedures down and everything's good. And it's now Exchange servers. And he makes a mistake with the same problem for one of the Exchange servers. It's similar, but not. But it's at the end, we've lost mail for 24 hours. I say, I'm at a concert. It's almost over. Stay put. Stay there. When I'm done, I said, my oldest son's with me. I will drop him off at home. I will head right to the office there. And you and I will talk about this. He is a nervous wreck. I said, relax. What's our goal? And we're in my office and I have a big whiteboard. And I said, what is our goal? He says, to get all that mail recovered. I said, no, that's gone. Oh, that's gone. We lost 24 hours. We're going to restore the backup from last night, from tape. And everything's going to be fine, except we lost 24 hours. I wrote on my whiteboard, to save our jobs. That was our number one thing. I said, you go home. You rest. Get a good night's sleep. You're not coming in the morning. Come in the afternoon. This is like 2 a.m. now. I said, it's now my responsibility. Mike, no, you can't. I said, I'm your boss. I'm your manager. It's my responsibility. Everything's going to be fine. He goes, and it's the way you deliver bad news. And this is the message. You can say, oh my God, we lost 24 hours of mail. Or you can deliver it, we only lost 24 hours. We could have lost everything. We only lost one day. It was awesome. It's how you sell the problem. And I didn't know that at the time as a young network engineer. And my boss didn't do that. They threw me under the bus and drove over me and beat me up rather than work with me and help me. And what I did, and I believe I was put in that position again to show the proper way of handling this. And by the end of the day, I had the CFO of the company in 2003 patting me on the back, congratulating me that we only lost 24 hours and absolutely nothing happened to my tech. That's how you deal with situations. And you know, the only thing that can help you is maturity, wisdom, and experience, and how you package the news. And this is a valuable lesson for your clients. How do you deliver bad news? There's the panic. Oh my God, the world is coming to an end panic. And then there's, hey, this is the problem. This is what we're dealing with. This is what, and have a path going forward. In the end here, it's how I took and learned a very valuable lesson about backups, and now there's a member in the chat room, Winston Wolf, who now understands my fear of scripts. This is what it's all about. And it's what makes you, and it's what you do with that. Take it. I looked back and said to myself years later, boy, it would have been nice to not have that happen to me. No, it's what made me what I am. It made me a better network manager. It made me have a better approach to backups. Don't be afraid of the pain and suffering. It's what makes you you. It's how you're built. It's how you come about. The fear that you face, it's how you do it, how you work with it, and how you grow. And the people that lets it eat them up and swallow them up, well, they're going to die from it. And that's it. And it's going to be over for their career or for whatever they do. Or you take it, you man up, you make it work for you, and you do what it takes. You got to look the fear square in the eye, deal with it, and grow from it and learn from it. And you know what? Sometimes you get another chance at the very same situation. And now you're better prepared for how to deal with it. And everybody around you is much happier. I hope you learn from this and gives you a little bit of insight. Things ain't all happy roses and great, you know, from my past. I don't think anybody is. You gotta have some pain and suffering. What makes us grow. If you don't make any mistakes, you're not going to learn. Embrace the mistakes. Learn what went wrong, make sure you know, never let it happen again and what you're going to do from it, and then move on. Was I afraid and scared, and was it a horrible thing that happened to me? Yes, it was. But I grew from it, learned from it, build on it. And that's what you got to do. Kate, I don't even think you could have imagined of the question of what you provoked here. And I hope you enjoyed show 600. I certainly did. Thank you so much for listening to the show. And you want to help me out? It's Black Friday coming up. It's the holiday season coming up. Use my Amazon link. That's the best thing you can do to help me out. Amazon.mikenation.net. Your price stays the same, but a small commission comes back to help support the show. That is the best way to support this show. Amazon.mikenation.net. My sponsor, Instant House Call. Give it a try. Go to instanthousecall.com. Download the trial. Use the promo code MikeTechShow. That's it. Everybody have a great holiday if you're celebrating Thanksgiving. And I will see you back here. I don't care how long tonight's show is. I queued up music. And it's funny. It's sad yet happy music. I thought of something. I said, what if I had to pick one song as the ultimate song that I love? My number one song. What is it? Now, a lot of you are going to say, oh, God only knows. Nah, that might be number two. The number one song is this, and this is Pachelbel's Canon in D. Give a listen, and then I'll come back and wrap up. Oh, I hope you enjoyed that. Isn't that relaxing and soothing after my passionate story there? Pachelbel's Canon in D, that is incredible. And you know, when it's Christmas time, that's why I like the Trans-Siberian Orchestra Christmas Canon, which that is the foundation of that song, what you just heard. So you're going to hear this again at Christmas time, only the Christmas version. As I was started to say, thank you so much. I hope you don't mind me going a little long for 600. I think it was worth it. I hope you got something out of it and enjoyed it. And I will see you back here, same time, same channel, Thursday, December 1st. Everybody, have a wonderful holiday, safe holiday. Have a great 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.